This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number three. Coming up this hour, Mark Cannizzaro is going to join us on the New York Post. We're going to talk about St. Peter's, the Peacocks, who impressed us with their win against Kentucky and impressed us even more with their win against Murray State. Are off to the Sweet 16. And this is a small school from Jersey City that is now the darling of the NCAA tournament. It was Oral Roberts a year ago. We've seen it with a number of these small seeds that catch fire, get into the Sweet 16, Florida Gulf Coast, right? Now, a lot of the attention is on them because of what they've done in the first two rounds. And the Sweet 16, remember, these are the 16 teams that are left for the national championship. And this small school in Jersey City is one of them. So we're going to get a little insight into them and what it is like now with all of the world's attention, or I should say basketball world's attention on them as they get ready for the Sweet 16 coming up this weekend. But, you know, I was going over some of the games, and you see, you go through some of the matchups, right? And you got, you know, Duke is still in there, and Villanova is still in there, and Michigan is an 11 seed. And, you know, you still got Gonzaga, and you still have Arizona, and you still have Kansas, and these are the number one seeds. And if you were covering basketball, right, and you were writing about basketball, what would you write for these couple of days leading up to Thursday and Friday's Sweet 16 matchups, right? Would you write yet another article about Mike Krzyzewski retiring and what he's meant to Duke and college basketball, blah, blah, blah? Would you write about Gonzaga and Mark Few's battle and fight to get that elusive national championship? These stories have been written before. Or would you write about St. Peter's and Shaheen Holloway and how calm and collected he was and how the team, again, the people couldn't find and didn't know where they existed, what conference they played, how they even gotten this thing in the first place. And yet they were filled with guys who could shoot and had absolutely no fear of the mighty, mighty Kentucky Wildcats. You might be writing similar stories that you've written about these kind of schools, but that's the story you would be going towards. We'll have that coming up at 40 past the hour. But coming up next, do you remember when David Ortiz was shot in a nightclub in 2019? Well, he put together an investigative team to find out why, and the story is pretty fascinating. We'll have that for you next on Wake Up Call at Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I'm still chuckling. Off the air, we were talking about Twister, that movie. We've done the Twister bit before. But
too many times.
Too many times, but that movie still... It's like you watch it to see if it was true that they really wrote it that way.
Yeah.
Did I realize...
There's got to be like a director's cut, behind the scenes cut. It was like, oh, no, we ad-libbed 90%
right.
of the dialogue.
I know. Exactly.
It's like, thank God.
Exactly. Oh, my God. Can you imagine those actors reading that script going, you want me to say this? Seriously? Do you want me to? Like, Jamie Gertz is like, a storm is thinking.
Well, she has
you
all.
You want me to say this?
She has all the lines, too, right? Doesn't
yeah,
she also?
Right?
And she's like, we got cows.
We got cows. Yeah. Jamie Gertz. I thought it was a metaphor. That's my favorite. You thought chasing tornadoes was a metaphor. Oh, my God. That movie is crazy fun.
It's too much fun.
Oh, my God. I don't know how they survived it just locking themselves onto a pipe. Like, survived a
F5. Yeah. I want to know the science behind that one.
Out. I know. Like, why didn't it rip their insides to pieces? Like, just
I mean, it tears up trees.
I know, yeah.
So, you know, the pipes go down further. They're stronger, I guess.
They must be, right? You just tie yourself to a tree. You survive an F5.
There's a anchor. There's a bunker underneath that it's tied down to.
Yeah. I tell you right now, I love living in Nashville, but that to me is the scariest part of living here.
Yeah,
we might get one of those.
It's because I sent you that video. I mean, we had tornadoes rip through Central Texas yesterday, and there's a video of a truck getting spun around, but then just drives off like nothing.
Just drives off.
Like, yeah, straight out of the movie Twister.
Yep. I've asked a lot of locals about it. Like, have we ever had a major tornado here in where, you know, town Spring Hill is where I live. And they go, no.
Don't you want them to say yes?
I want them to say yes because I feel like
it won't happen again.
We're not due for one. Like, Mother Nature's like, nah, I'm gonna hit them twice.
Yeah, I've already nailed that spot once. We're good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're good. But maybe one day. God, I'm just every now and then the siren goes off and then you don't get anything. But nevertheless. So this David Ortiz story. So you and I were doing a show back in 2019.
Of course.
When this attack on David Ortiz occurred. Remember, he got shot in a Dominican nightclub back in 2019. And we were like, whoa, and he almost died from it.
Yep.
Right? Almost was killed from this gunshot. But there was all this speculation as to why David Ortiz was shot. And some people speculated that there was a guy with a gun, he was going for somebody else, and David Ortiz was in the way, and that David Ortiz owed some people money, and there was all sorts of rumors and speculation.
Yeah, so, the gunman was nervous.
Right.
And just shot the wrong person.
Exactly. Like, he misidentified David Ortiz, and we were like, how's that happen?
Yeah.
Isn't
he a patron saint of your country?
Right. Exactly. So there was all sorts of these wild speculations that were going around, right? That David Ortiz cheated with a man's wife, and that man was jealous. I mean, whatever. So Ortiz puts together a team. He hires former Boston Commissioner Edward Davis to go investigate. Like, he paid for his own investigation into why somebody would want to kill me. And all of that speculation of why David Ortiz would have been shot led us to this. That a Dominican drug trafficker was jealous of Ortiz and then felt disrespected by him. So, and this is petrifying, Ortiz, there was a hit on Ortiz. Drug trafficker Cesar Peralta put out a hit, a bounty on Ortiz, sanctioned the hit squad that was sent to kill him. Unbelievable. Peralta is being held without bail in Puerto Rico on unrelated charges of conspiracy to import cocaine and heroin. But if you're David Ortiz, how does that sit with you?
I couldn't go back.
Like,
ever.
Are you even worried about being hit in the United States? Like, what? Like, is this guy's, is the bounty over? Like, I don't think bounties work where they, like, get one shot and, he survived, so you win. doesn't work that way.
Yeah, he's missing some of his intestines. We've succeeded.
I guess we're done here. Like, they put a hit on him to kill him for disrespecting him. Ortiz and Peralta are close friends. That's interesting. Peralta said he was disrespected. They don't really get into what Ortiz did to say that he disrespected this guy. But
yeah,
whatever,
show up to
is,
his kid's birthday after Ortiz promised.
Maybe so, right? Oh my God, you're supposed to show up to my kid's birthday.
No, you die.
Show up. Now some guy at a nightclub is taking shots at you. Goodness gracious. I mean, again, there was all sorts of speculation again that Ortiz was with somebody that had a shady background. Remember, that was part of the story. So, like, Ortiz was at this nightclub, and part of his group was a guy that was involved in gangs and was involved in this sort of underground illegal criminal enterprise. And that there was a belief that the target was him, not David Ortiz. Why would they shoot David Ortiz? But if he's with a guy that's in kind of involved in this and was not on good terms with one side, then it seemed to make sense. But that's not what this was. David Ortiz was the target. Seriously. That's got to be, again, if you're David Ortiz and that information comes back to you, do you go, well, is my life in danger still? Because the guy's in jail, but that doesn't mean the hit squad isn't still after me. It doesn't mean the bounty isn't still up for grabs. Like, what if I walk out of my Boston house and somebody managed to come to the United States? This is a really, really scary story. Could this be a 30 for 30?
I think it has to be.
Right?
I mean, you're not doing yourself right if you don't.
Like, the whole David Ortiz story could be a 30 for 30, I think. The whole thing. Helping the Red Sox win the championship in 2004 against the Cardinals, winning the series MVP in 2013, especially coming off the bombing that happened where he grabbed the microphone and said, "This is our bleeping city," right? And just taking over that series. You know, he's beloved in Boston. And then this part of the story, that he was at this nightclub and some drug kingpin? Like, I'll be honest with you, my memory bank is filled with stuff, and sometimes I forget things, but I can't remember an athlete being the target of a drug kingpin's hit. If you know one, let me know on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. Maybe I'm missing one.
You mean you don't roll in those circles?
I don't really roll in those circles. My God. Like, if you found out somebody put a hit on your life, I wouldn't leave the house. I would be door dashing all the time. But even door dash, I'd be like, leave it outside. You got my money. I'm not coming down. Who are you? I'd live my life. What if the hit was called off, but someone didn't get the message?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, oh, that paper wasn't supposed to go out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what if David Ortiz finds this guy and, like, works it out, and the guy goes, all right. I overreacted, David. I'm good. We're good. But meanwhile, there's some lone gunman out there thinking he's still going to get the bounty. My goodness. Like, that's the part of this story that hasn't been resolved. But in all due context, it was 3 years ago. So, you know, it's quite possible this is done, right? like the hit is done. You know what the problem is? And I'll be flat on honest with you guys in the way I think. I am way too influenced by Hollywood. So when I see a story like this, I don't see the reality. What I see in my head is a bunch of well-dressed assassins putting silencers on guns and laser rifles and monitoring David Ortiz and, you know, killing the landlady, or, you know, like to get into the penthouse. You know what I mean? Like, Hollywood has made me believe what a assassin would do, right? When in reality, they're probably just guys who can't shoot straight, looking for a quick cash. That's the way I kind of see this. Like, I remember it was years and years ago, but I still was an adult when a friend of mine told me there's no such thing as a gun silencer that makes a gun go. Like, I was like, really? Because that's all I see in movies. Like, no, the silencer lessens the decibel, but it's still pretty loud. It just doesn't blow your eardrums off.
I mean, it
doesn't. But no, there isn't a whisper quiet gun.
You know, you should have said spoiler alert.
Like, watch the movie Casino. If you watch the movie Casino, there's a scene where the guy who plays Stone, the guy, he's shot going to his car, and the killers walk up to him with a gun, and Scorsese tried to make it the quietest gun in the history of firearms. They literally walk over to him and go click, 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 click. There's not even a gun fire. He just like click. It's not even a explosion. And I'm like, do they really have guns like that? My friend's like, of course they don't. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm that ignorant of this kind of thing. So again, I'm sure it's not like John Wick, right? Where there's just a bunch of trained, super trained stealth assassins with 5 passports in a box with cougarans trying to kill David Ortiz. I'm sure it's just like some guy with one gun and one bullet, like going, I think I see David Ortiz. Right? That's basically it. That's all I got. That's basically how I think assassinations.
But I'm 100% with you, because I mean, I think I'm influenced or ruined by Hollywood as well. Because that's the only way I know about that life.
Sure. I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, I don't roll in those. I don't have any clue.
Yeah, well, you mean you don't roll with hitmen assassins on a regular basis to learn how they work?
I don't. I, you know, sometimes I do. I wish I did, but I don't.
Like, I keep thinking about Bruce Willis in The Jackal. Remember that movie? Did you ever see that
movie? Yes, yes.
Richard Gere was trying to track him down, and he was like a paid assassin, and he got his orders through special code on a special laptop, and he was inventing different weapons and killing Jack Black, and like that's what Hollywood has let me to believe hitmen were. Like, if you wanted to find one, you had to find some underground code and some encrypted password in order to get a hold of them. And then you had to wire money to a Swiss bank account. And when the funds were there, you had to send a picture that was easily destroyed of who you wanted offed. In this case, for example, he would have gotten like a baseball card. Right. And then he was like, that's the guy. And you're like, OK, that's the guy. But no, it's probably just, hey, David's at a club. Isn't there a hit on it? Yeah, let's go take care of that. Probably is more like the deal. But what a story. I don't know. That kind of adds a little.
I mean,
does that add a little impressiveness to David Ortiz's life?
First of all, when you hear drug kingpin, don't you think you immediately think of Tony Montana, right?
Yeah, you think of a guy isolated in like a compound.
Well, or I think of, I think of him sitting behind a big desk going, I want him dead.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
And, yelling at everyone like, you take care of this now. This is disrespectful.
And you need that one cool advisor that is like, if you kill David Ortiz, the weight of the United States government will be on top of our heads. I don't care.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's again, we are too influenced by Hollywood. We are so like surrounded by armed guards in this chateau, calling out for the death of one of the best baseball players in Boston Red Sox history. God, look at our imaginations going wild. So fun. All right, we got Mike Cannizzaro joins us to talk St. Peter's. That's coming up in 15 minutes on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, coming up in about 10 minutes, Mark Cannizzaro is going to join us from the New York Post. We'll talk about St. Peter's. We're going to take a look at them. It's, the Cinderella story of the 2021 NCAA tournament. We don't always get a 15 seed or a 14 seed in the Sweet 16. Then we do, and then, like I said earlier, you get all the attention and all the love, and everybody loves you, and everybody believes in you, and whenever you exit this tournament, it becomes one of the lasting memories, and it also shows up a lot in one shining moment. But St. Peter's out of Newark, New Jersey, plays out of the Mid-American Athletic Conference. It's the same conference as Iona, Siena, Monmouth, Manhattan, Fairfield, and they finished second in the standings. And won the conference tournament, then went on to the NCAA tournament, where they went on and beat Kentucky in a game that still, even now, even after we've had it almost a week, it's still really, really tough to fathom how that really good Kentucky team just was lost and confused over the St. Peter's Peacocks. But then again, that happens to all the twos that go down. Like, all the twos you go, I can't believe Ohio State lost. I can't believe Michigan State lost. I can't believe, name your two losing to a 15. That's just kind of the way it is. So again, the Sweet 16 is coming up. They're going to take on Purdue, that game coming up on Friday, that's in Philadelphia. And you know what? And I was saying this before, and I don't mean to be like cliche here, but look, does St. Peter's believe they can beat anybody? Of course. And they're all going to say that, right? But eventually, we know that these Cinderellas, the show comes to an end. But the reality of it is, if you can beat Kentucky, you really can beat anybody. Like, Kentucky is not far away from some of the top teams in college basketball, because there isn't really a separate tier of college basketball this year. Right, look, Gonzaga was flawed in a couple of ways. Not a lot, but just enough. Right? Kansas, Arizona, they've been tested in this tournament. If you're St. Peter's, it's not like you're running into better teams than who you've beaten, because you've taken down a two. So you should feel confident against the Boilermakers. it doesn't mean you'll win, because what Purdue has now that Kentucky kind of probably didn't do enough of was Purdue now knows how threatening you are. Coaches can say all the time to their kids, right, in these tournament games, when you're a 2-seed, 3-seed, whatever, you can say, hey, I know they have a 14 next to them or a 15 next to them, but you better pay attention. We're going to study them, and we're going to watch them, because they can beat us. But kids don't necessarily believe that, right? They know they're some of the best basketball players in the world. And they know that, you know, deep down, like, some of them are going to go, some of the players that they look around and see in their locker room are going to be playing in the NBA. And so they look around, they go, oh, all right, no coach, coaches, but we'll probably cruise to this by 30, and then we'll don't worry about the next game. And then you're in a dogfight, and then you're in this dogfight with this team that's pesky and doesn't really care. And they're just going out there playing their kind of basketball and putting you on notice. And then it's too late to sort of remember that you had to prepare. Now, why do these teams, these 14 seeds, 13 seeds, 15 seeds, why can't they get to like the Final Four when, again, as I mentioned, they're certainly capable of beating anybody, is because Purdue now knows how threatening they are. And Purdue is going to take St. Peter's as seriously as if it was Kentucky in that spot. Right? Purdue would be taking, like, whoever it was, Murray State, Kentucky, it doesn't matter. Whoever they were going to be scheduled to play, they would have taken that game seriously. They would have gone back, gone to the drawing board, said, this is our next opponent. It's a real deal. No matter what their name is, no matter what conference they play in, no matter what, we are going to study them and learn everything about them. And we're going to have a team that is going to take them seriously, because they know that this team is capable of slaying some of the bigger giants in the field. And that's what you got to do if you are Purdue, is take St. Peter's as seriously as you would have taken Kentucky. And that's where these teams get bogged down. They kind of die down a little bit, right? Once this tournament gets to this point, their upsets occur early in this tournament because of the factor of, you know, the coaches may take the opponent seriously, but do the players take the opponent seriously? You can only do so much as a coach, right? You can only say, watch it, this team is really good at shooting threes. And then they go, yeah, I know, coach, but they're 20 and 12. What do you know, like, we're 27 and 3. Like, what, you know, we play in the Big Ten. They play in a conference that got one tournament team in here. So that's where coaches have trouble, when you have this big program and you're playing some team that's pesky, that's in a game. But remember what I said last week and even early this week. What impressed me about St. Peter's, and what impressed me about, Oral Roberts or MTSU or anybody else that's done this, is the fact is that when there is a point in the game where St. Peter's is playing a game that they feel like they can win, because it's more realistic than just saying it. Right? I mean, every team thinks they can win, right? Until they get punched in the mouth and they're down by 32 points. Right? Go to any locker room of any double-digit seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, do you think you can beat Gonzaga? Oh, hell yeah, we think we can beat Gonzaga. And then Gonzaga's up 32 to 12, and you're like, well, maybe we can't. But there is a moment when St. Peter's was like, wait a minute, hold on. We are in this game. We are leading Kentucky. We got 6 minutes left, and we are playing good basketball, and they can't seem to stop some of the things we're doing. And guess what? They're missing shots on the other end, and we're getting rebounds. And we're going to the line and making our free throws, and we're knocking down threes, and we're finding the open player. We can win this. And at that moment, that's when you need a good coach like Shaheen Holloway, who's like, hold on, I always told you could win this game. Now you go win this game. But I never told you couldn't win this. So now go out and get it.
It's got to be a surreal feeling.
Right, exactly.
If you're St. Peter's and you're, you know, realizing, like, hey, we got a chance against Kentucky.
We really are. Like, again, it's easy in the beginning and the game, it flows. But
you see
like
it all the time.
You got 5 minutes left, and you're like, we're up by two? Like, we have shown in 35 minutes of basketball we can play with this team. Like, let's finish the deal. And then they did, and it set them off to this. Murray says, we're going to look at the Peacocks. Mark Cannizzaro is going to join us next. This is great. The Peacocks of St. Peter's. Next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. We've been talking about the St. Peter's Peacocks, you know, obviously the Cinderella story, but looking at the whole Sweet 16 as a whole. So many of you probably didn't know where St. Peter's was, didn't know much about their team, you know, just kind of looked at them as a 15 seed, and then they beat Kentucky, and it was like, whoa. When they beat Murphy State, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Mark Cannizzaro joins us on a progressive guest line from the New York Post. One of the best writers out there, Mark. Thank you for joining us. I have enjoyed your work for years. I think you cover golf better than anybody in the country, and now I got a chance to talk to you about St. Peter's. Thank you for joining us.
Anytime, Tony. Good talking to you.
Good. All right, so... again, as I mentioned, many people didn't know about this team, and then they started looking up Jersey City. Okay, here's this team. In terms of their presence, is this a very good team that got into the tournament? Is this a surprise team that got into the tournament? What is their background?
Well, it's a little bit of both, and some, to be honest with you, Tony. I mean, they are they've been a pretty good team in an underrated conference. The MAC has got some, you know, I mean, the MAC's got Iona, where Patino is coaching this year, and they had an amazing year and got bounced from the tournament. Monmouth is a really good school. There's some pretty good teams in that league, so it's a pretty good league that prepares a team for a tournament like this. And it's also a team that's just gotten hot, you know, with a guy that's a coach, you know, in Shaheen Holloway, who's a former Seton Hall player, who is a really good coach who stresses defense. And in fact, I wrote my column today about the fact that, you know, how much the defense is in, you know, in St. Peter's DNA, and how Holloway basically says, if you don't play defense from where, you're not going to play. You know, I don't take guys out of the game for making a mistake on offense. I take them out for making a mistake on defense. So I think these kids just kind of bought in, and it's like one of those kind of perfect storms where they had pretty good talent, you know, a bunch of under-recruited guys who have been together for a couple few years now, so there's good chemistry, and they've just clicked at the right time. It's kind of like that hot, you know, NBA or NHL team that gets into the playoffs and makes a run. Now, you know, do they have enough talent to go beat Purdue, you know, on Friday? You know, yeah, they do have enough going on that it could happen, but like, you know, the previous two games, you don't expect it to happen, but the way they play defense, you know, it keeps them in the games, and these guys believe now. I mean, these kids are like, I mean, they don't think they can be stopped.
That's the one impressive thing. I have been talking about this with these double-digit seeds. When they go into these upsets, there's eventually a point in the game where, you know, in the beginning of the game, they can say, well, like, we feel like we can win the game. But then with, like, 5 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go, and they're up or they're trailing by one, and they've realized that they can be in the game, sometimes cracks occur. How together is this unit in terms of confidence, and how much does Shaheen Holloway give them that confidence in these two games that say, you're not going anywhere, you're going to be right in this until the end?
Well, you know, I've talked to a lot of the players in the last few days, and Shaheen's belief in them kind of steals their own belief in themselves, which is, you know, kind of a, you know, a coaching virtue, I guess. It's a proper button to push or whatever, and but it's interesting what you just said, because if you look at the Murray State game, which was the second round game they won, you know, they were up. They never trailed in that game. I mean, they kind of, you know, they had the pace going at the way they wanted it in the first half, and they were up 40-27 early in the second half. I think it started an 8-0 run to start the second half, and Murray State, you know, about midway through the second half, made a pretty aggressive run and got it down to like 3 points. And actually got us close to two, and I'm sitting courtside, and you could see on the faces of the Murray State players that they're like, all right, we got this now. You know, these guys, they're going to go away. You know, we've won 21 games in a row, haven't lost a game since December, whatever. But that was a 31-2 team they were playing, right? So I could see it on the faces of these Murray State kids. But you know what? Every single time down the other side of the floor, St. Peter's had an answer and kind of staved off the momentum a little bit. And that is, to me, as impressive as anything, because, yeah, you do expect at some point. Listen, I'm a golfer, as you just referenced. I'm a junkie golfer, right? And if I have a really good round going and I'm getting to, like, the 15th hole and I'm getting ready to shoot my lowest score, I am going to choke.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's going to happen, you know? And, you know, there's going to be a double bogey in there somewhere that's going to completely sabotage the round. And you kind of, I don't want to say expected that from, but it wouldn't have surprised me if that had occurred with Murray State. And, you know, the game before, which was the Kentucky game, that was really the start of this all. And I, again, these Kentucky players, I watched them play. They were just waiting for St. Peter's to go away.
Right.
You know, these teams, you know, these young, you know, these upstart teams, they got the adrenaline rush early or whatever. Eventually they're going to realize, holy crap, we're playing Kentucky. You know, we got no chance against these guys. They're taller, more athletic, faster, whatever. But it never happens. And you could just see that on the faces of the Kentucky players late in the game, like, who the frick are these guys? And why are they not going away, right?
What kind of player does he recruit? We're getting backstories now. Doug Edert and Casey DeFeo and Bill Lee. And like we're getting – Matthew Lee, I should say. We're getting these backgrounds. What kind of player does he go after? Who are these guys?
Well, I'll tell you exactly. This was one of the first stories I wrote last week in Indianapolis. Shaheen Holloway was an undersized guard, you know, from here in the city, who played at Seton Hall and was always doubted, you know, just that kind of stereotypical underdog guy with a chip on his shoulder. And that's the way he played. And he always played that way. He played from 96 to 2000 for Seton Hall. And those are the guys he recruits. He recruits guys with chips on their shoulders, the guys who, like, are pissed off that they've been overlooked. And, you know, the same way that Shaheen felt his entire playing career. And that those are the exact guys he recruits. And when you talk to him, that's who they are. I mean, this guy, Doug Edert, it's hysterical watching him. If you just looked at him on the street, you're like, oh, you play college basketball? Really? You know, I
right.
mean, you know what I mean? And yet this guy's dropping, you know, big shot after big shot in the most critical moments of the game. So, yeah, it's just those are the guys. I mean, that is very as simple as you can boil it down. Shaheen tries to recruit guys who he feels are like him.
You brought up the defense. What other characteristics of this team has been the sort of identifying nature of this St. Peter's team?
Well, can we say testicles on the
radio
show? That is in Webster's, right? So I don't know if we can use the B word for that, but he's got a team full of guys that have stones. I mean, that's, you know, that's the bottom line. And I think my favorite line, and probably will go down to this as the favorite line of the week of the tournament, I should say, was after the Murray State game. You know, somebody, I don't know, some reporter from out of town asked Shaheen, you know, why don't you guys, you know, where does this come from, this confidence? Why wouldn't you be intimidated against the bigger, you know, stronger, faster team? And I don't know if you saw this quote, but Shaheen was like, you know, we got a bunch of guys from Jersey and New York City.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, are we supposed to be afraid of something? Somebody trying to out-muscle us? He goes, that's what we do, you know? And you know, so that's, you know, it's an intangible, but it's there. You see it on the court.
That's my first thought when I found out St. Peter's was in Jersey City. My first thought was, oh, that's where Bobby Hurley Sr. coached at St. Anthony's all those years. That was a memory that I had.
Well,
Bobby
Hurley Sr. actually went to St. Peter's.
He's like their
most
famous
grad. Yeah, and actually, yeah, because St. Anthony's is just around the corner from there, and it's not too far away. So, yeah, that's the DNA of the program there, right? That kind of, you know. That kind of vibe. If I could just tell you, and it's very, very hard for our listeners to understand, but if you see the gym that these guys play in, and I went there on Sunday for the little welcoming kind of welcome home kind of thing, you know, when they flew back from Indianapolis. And, okay, full disclosure, by the way, I've been New York Post for 28 years. I used to live in Jersey City, okay? And I've been covering college basketball for all the time, and I honestly had never covered a St. Peter's game until this tournament.
Wow.
I swear to God, I used to cover Seton Hall back in the day, but I never covered St. Peter's. I went to that gym for the, I want to use the word arena, but that just, it's a gym. It's not an arena. It's literally like a high school gym. They 1,800 people, you know, is their capacity. It's got those kind of like accordion roll away, stands that you see in high school, right? I just sat there on Sunday thinking, these dudes just beat Kentucky. And a friend of mine actually, who's kind of in the know, had told me that he had heard that John Calipari's salary annually is more than the entire basketball budget at St. Peter's. Now, I have not confirmed that, but I wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. So, I mean, just to see what these guys have done with where they come from, their campus is an urban campus, so there really isn't a campus. I mean, it's just in the middle of Jersey City, basically, And, you know, that you wouldn't even know the basketball gym was a basketball gym unless you were looking for it. You know, it's right on the street. So to think about where this school has come from with the amenities they have and, you know, compared to the schools they're beating, and if you went back and looked at what is the Kentucky training facilities and Murray State right. and Purdue, it's staggering, really.
I'm feeling pretty good about this, but this question is going to be the negative question. What does this mean for Shaheen Holloway in his future? He's got to be getting the phone calls.
Oh, he's going to be gone because, well, you have Kevin Willard, who was Seton Hall for the last 12 years and is a mentor of Shaheen's. Shaheen was, you know, worked with him at Iona. And you know, so he's been with, I mean, he's the handpicked successor. And Kevin Willard's being introduced at Maryland today as their new coach. So, I mean, it's the worst kept secret in college basketball that Shaheen is going there. And really, you hate to rain on the St. Peter's parade here. And I had a conversation actually with the parents of one of the players. I had some lunch with them on Friday before Saturday, I should say, before the Murray State game, because they were basically saying they're just under the assumption that Shaheen's gone, and it's kind of it's the cost of success to a large degree. It's the consequence right. of success to a large degree, right? You see all these Super Bowl teams in the NFL, they win the Super Bowl and everybody wants to get paid, right? And that's why it's so hard, you know, for these teams to keep their players and repeat. And so what's going to happen now is, you know, who knows what St. Peter's is going to look like next year? Because, you know, with this whole transfer portal window that these players have choices for, most of these players on this roster are at St. Peter's because of Shaheen. They're not there at St. Peter's for the campus life or the fact that they're living in a kind of a crappy neighborhood in Jersey City, you know, with bad dorms and, you know what I mean? They're there for Shaheen. So, you know, it's very possible you may see a lot of these kids transfer and try to, try to make something out of their last year or two of eligibility somewhere in a, you know, now that they've also proven themselves on a big stage. So I hate to be, a negative thing, but I mean, it's like, it's the reality of what's going on. I mean, Shaheen is going to be at Seton Hall next year and, you know, who knows who's going to replace him and who knows whether the players stay. And so this is kind of, this magic is really, you know, it's going to be fleeting, you know, at the moment, you know, and you hope that this has brought enough attention to the school that more kids will go to that school, you know, no matter who's coaching. But in the immediacy, you know, this is kind of it right now. This is not like this team's going to be back next year, you know, automatically, right?
Yep. Mark Cannizzaro, New York Post. Great stuff. Really appreciate your time. And again, author of 7 Days in Augusta, which, by the way, is a fantastic book. Thank you for writing that as well. Appreciate you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Mark Cannizzaro of the New York Post covering St. Peter's. And again, he covers golf, and he's one of the best golf writers out there. I love his coverage of the golf tournaments. He really is fantastic at it. He does have the book 7 Days in Augusta if you love the Masters. It's very well written behind the scenes of that golf tournament. But he really laid out a great case for what's going on at St. Peter's. Again, Jersey City, small school. That idea of the roll away. Like, I don't mean to get cliche here because I hate cliches. I really do. But it really is a Hoosiers moment, isn't it? Doesn't it sound like a thing out of Hoosiers, like a modern-day Hoosiers, where you got this school that's playing in a gym where they've got the accordion benches, yep. right? And that's what they play in. And they're playing, like he mentioned, they're playing a school in Kentucky that has a better practice facility than they do arena.
Yeah.
Like, Kentucky has a better locker room than probably anything those kids have ever seen, ever. Right? And yet, like, it's right out of the movie. I mean, it's right out of the
really
movie.
It really is. I mean,
when that Hickory school goes to that big arena and they do have to do the measurements and stuff, like that's St. Peter's arriving to play this juggernaut school that is the Kentucky Wildcats. That has, a $10 million coach. Right? Like, it's nuts.
They have no business beating that team.
Right? And again, because a lot of people, like, we all get it, right? That sometimes you get a team in this tournament that wasn't great, but caught fire, like, in their
right.
conference
yeah.
tournament. Like, they're just not that good, but somehow they magically won 4 games in 4 days, and they won their conference tournament, and now their reward is this. But they're a good team in the MAC. They won second place in the MAC. good, solid team, well coached, well, you know, seasoned in terms of veterans. And so, yeah, is it still a shock to beat Kentucky? Yes, but that's not them. Like, that's not a, like, we don't even know what we're doing. Like, they earned their berth by playing well in their conference, winning their conference tournament. And as, like I said, when he was describing their gym, it's like, you can't feel a school any smaller than St. Peter's Peacocks. Like, unless they're just nailing backboards in dorm rooms and calling it a basketball court. All right, we'll come back, wrap up this hour, and get you set for the rest of the day here on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, stick with Sports Map Radio all day long. We'll be back tomorrow. What's the betting favorite tomorrow's quarterback news? Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo?
Got to be Baker.
I think it would be Baker. I'm betting that tomorrow when we get on the air at 7 a.m. Eastern time, 4 a.m. Pacific.
But little do we know that it'll be Derek Carr.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it might be Derek Carr for all we know. Like, it could come out of nowhere. But tomorrow, anticipate some quarterback news. All right, I'm Tony D. That's Ron Culver. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Have a great day. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.